Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Namachara Hari Das Thakur ki jai. Prem Sagaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopita Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan ki jai. Sri Vrindavan Dham ki jai. Navadvipdham ki jai. Ganga Jamuna Tulasi Makti Devi ki jai. Ananda Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai. Samaveta, Bhakta Vrindaki Jai, Go Premanandi, all glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga, all glorious to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya,
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Saraswata Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavari Pashachare Shatarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, chapter 48, verse 25. Adesha no vasataya kala buri bhaga. Ya sarva deva pitra bhuta na deva murti. Yat pada socha salidam trijagat punati. Satvam jagad guru adoksha jaya pravishtaha. Adya. Today, Isha. O Lord, Na. Our Vasataya. Residence. Kalu. Indeed. Buri. Extremely. Bhaga. Fortunate. Aya. Who? Sarva Deva. Supreme Lord. Pitra. For fathers. Buddha. All living entities. Nra. Human beings. Deva. Demigods. Murti. Who embody? Yat. Whose? Pada. Feet. Saucha. Which has washed. Salilam. The water. Trijagat. Three worlds. Punati. Purifies. Sa. He. Tvam. You. Jagat. Of the universe. A guru. Spiritual master. Dokshaja. O you who are beyond the purview of the material senses. Ya. Which. Pravishta. Having entered. Translation: today, O Lord, my home has become most fortunate because you have entered it. As the Supreme Truth, you embody the forefathers, ordinary creatures, human beings, and demigods. And the water that has washed your feet purifies the three worlds. Indeed, O Transcendent One, you are the spiritual master of the universe. Purport, Sridhar Swami has nicely interpreted Akura's feelings as follows. Akura said, my Lord, although I am a householder, today my home has become more pious than the forest where sages perform austerities. Why? Simply because you have entered my home. Indeed, you are the personification of the deities who preside over the five sacrifices a householder must perform to atone for unavoidable violence committed to living beings in the home. You are the spiritual truth behind all these creations, and now you have entered my home. The five daily sacrifices enjoined for a householder are: one, sacrifice to Brahman by studying the Vedas; two, sacrifice to the forefathers by making offerings to them; three, sacrifice to all creatures by putting aside a portion of one's meal; four, sacrifice to human beings by extending hospitality; and five, sacrifice to the demigods by performing fire sacrifices, and so on. Translation: today, O Lord, my home has become most fortunate because you have entered it. As the Supreme Truth, you embody the forefathers, ordinary creatures, human beings, and demigods, and the water that has washed your feet purifies the three worlds. Indeed, O Transcendent One, you are the spiritual master of the universe. So, here, Akura again is indicating how Krishna is actually the Supreme Lord. And here he takes one example of how he is everything. Actually, in the beginning, he indicated the Lord is the universe, the Lord is everything, etc. He enters into everything. Here he says he is the personification or the Murti of all Devas, Pitras, Bhutas, and Nara. That means human beings, etc. In other words, he is everything. But these are particular examples given for entities to whom one normally is indebted in life. And to compensate for those debts, then we have to do certain things. And, of course, by doing what is called the Pancha Mahayagya every day,
the householder gets exempted from all of his accidental sins that he commits all day long. So this is one of the features in the Varnashram system for all householders. You're supposed to do these five sacrifices every day. So there is Brahma Yajna, which literally means a sacrifice for Brahman or to Brahman, etc., to the Supreme. But actually it means the Vedas, sacrifice to the Vedas. So how do you sacrifice to the Vedas? You study the Vedas. So in other words, one should every day recite the Vedas and study the Vedas. Of course, it is a very long drawn out process, so that is abbreviated when they do the Panchamahayagyas every morning by simply reciting the first verse of each Veda. So that consists of the Brahma Yajna. We've recited all the Vedas. So that's one obligation. Of course, this applies to persons who are Dvija. They've got their thread, so they're Vaishya Kshatriya or Brahmana, and they can do these, recite the Vedas. Of course, usually it's the Brahmins that do it, but the Vaishyas and Kshatriyas are also qualified to recite the Vedas. So they have to recite the first Veda, first verse of each Veda, and then that means they've studied the Vedas for the day. There's Pitra Yajna. So one is indebted to the Pitras, of course, because without the service to the forefathers, we cannot take birth. We come from father, grandfather, etc. So we have ancestors, so we have to offer respects to them. And if we do these things daily, we are exempted from accidental sins we commit. So what is the Pitra Yajna? This consists of tarpanas. So generally tarpanas are offering handfuls of water. So one offers to the pitras every day some waters and recites the mantras for the pitras, etc. That's also not so complicated to do. There's Bhuta Yajna, sacrifice to all living entities. This is also relatively simple. You give them some food. Give animals food. So you take some food and put it outside, and then animals eat it. Because we do not exist by ourselves. We are obviously interdependent with other living entities, plants and trees, etc. So we have to respect all living entities. So we offer some food to them. Nriyagya. Sacrifice to human beings. So this has been, of course, one could do all sorts of services for human beings, but as a daily ritual, this actually means that one should invite a person into the house and feed him and take care of him, give them shelter. Of course, it means a qualified person, not simply a beggar or anyone, but a qualified person should be invited into the house, and then one should serve that person. So that's Nriyagya, which is Atithi Seva, serving the guests in the house. So this is a very important part of the Grihastha Dharma, because the Grihasthas support all the other ashramas. They support the brahmacharis. Brahmacharis go out and beg, and they beg from householders, and they get food and they bring it back to the ashram. So that's how the Gurukul survives, because of donations of food from the householders. Vanaprastas, how do they survive? They get food from the householders. Sannyasis, how do they survive? They get food from the householders also. So the householder is the one who supports all of the other ashramas. A very, very important feature of household life. He's the backbone because he supports the other ashramas. And fifth, sacrifice to devas, Deva Yajna. Which may consist of worshipping different devatas or worshipping the Supreme Lord, etc., in different ways through sacrifices or archana, etc. So, if one performs these every day, then one is exempted from all of the accidental sinful activities of violence that one commits during the day, such as killing bugs when one sweeps the floor, or one lights the fire, or grinds up the dal for the idli paste or whatever, or rolls chapatis or whatever. That we can always kill some insect while we're walking, and then we step on an insect or a worm or something. So all this is accidental sin, and we get some karma for it. So all day long we're doing all sorts of activities we don't know about, and we're getting karma for those activities in future lifetimes. So to cancel out that all that karma, then we have Panchamahayagya. We do that every day, and then we're exempted from all those unintentional violent acts. If we do intentional violent acts, of course, this does not cover that. But one has to do prayaschittas, extra activity. But this is done on a daily basis to exempt one from the accidental sinful activities. And this is enjoined for the householder. Every day he has to do this because the householder is more active in doing things and whatever. And he has a facility for doing these sacrifices. So this is the householder is the one who's obligated to do these rituals. We find different entities are here, and which one gives sacrifice to living entities, devatas, pitras, ordinary human beings, sages, etc. So, here in this verse, Akura states that Supreme Lord is the embodiment of everything, all of these. So, ultimately, if we worship the Lord, all of this is covered. So that's a higher understanding. Now, of course, generally, those who are following Varnashram, they continue to do the act, even if they are worshipping Vishnu or Krishna. But from the Bhagavad point of view, if we worship Supreme Lord, then we don't have to do anything else. Everything is satisfied. So there's a verse in the Hari Bhakti Vilas that says, if we are engaged in worship of the Supreme Lord and we neglect to do some of our varnashramic duties, which often consist of satisfying pitras and devas and whatever, we are exempted because the rishis, they do all of these activities on our behalf if we forget to do them or we don't do them for some reason. So they compensate for us if you're worshiping Supreme Lord. So in other words, this fulfills the statement of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita at the end, where he says, you incur no sinful act by giving up other dharmas and simply surrendering to me. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha syami. I free you from all sins. So therefore, if we neglect to do these duties like the Panchamahayagya, etc., then we're exempted from sin. However, if we don't worship the Lord and we forget to do our daily activities in the Varnashram system, we get sin for that. Worship the Supreme Lord, no sin, because it covers everything else. And of course, even if we do these acts, there's always fault attached to these different activities. So, how do we absolve ourselves from the faults in doing these different activities? Remembrance of Supreme Lord, remembrance of Vishnu. Then we get free from the bad results of faulty activities, etc. So that is why in the Varnashram system, though they worship devatas and whatever, still one must always worship Vishnu. And this is a safeguard to cover up all of the faults and what omissions that take place. In other words, if we don't worship Vishnu actually, and we're obviously going to commit mistakes, then we don't get any result for our activities. So Vishnu or Krishna must be worshipped in any case, even in the Varnashram system. Akura is stating that Supreme Lord is the embodiment of all of these items. So we worship the Supreme Lord, everything is satisfied. So it's a very a mature statement of a Vaishnava to understand that worship the Lord relieves one from other obligations if for some reason we don't do those duties or whatever. So in other words, the prime activity we should do is worship of the Supreme Lord. And the Supreme Lord is taken the form of Krishna. And Krishna has entered into the house of Akura. So this is considered to be most fortunate because personification of everything has entered into his house. So it's ultimately purifying more than anything else because he is everything. Yeah? And furthermore, then he says that we know that the Ganga is pure because it washed the feet of Vishnu. If the foot water can purify the three worlds, if the Supreme Lord himself, not just his feet, but the whole Supreme Lord, with his, all of his limbs, enters into your house, then how much more purifying that could be? And he's not purifying three worlds, he's purifying the house. So it has a most marvelous effect upon the house of Akura, because the Supreme Lord is there. In this way, he glorifies him. And then lastly, he talks about his being Jagat Guru. You are the Jagat Guru. Of course, Guru means one who has great knowledge. But Supreme Lord has all knowledge spontaneously by his nature. So naturally, he is the guru for everyone. So therefore, he is Jagat Guru, guru of the whole universe, and capable of purifying anyone or giving knowledge to anyone and correcting their situation. In terms of material world, everything is impure. Why? Because of ignorance. So we can purify water or whatever, and of course a better water is Ganga water. But ultimate purification is get rid of the ignorance. How do we get rid of the ignorance? By knowledge. So the highest knowledge is the Supreme Lord himself. He is the embodiment of all knowledge. So therefore he's the most purifying of all. But within bhakti, we're not talking about purification so much. Though we say that bhakti is kleshagni, it destroys all karmas, sins, anartas, etc. So that's the purifying element. That's the first effect of bhakti. What is the final effect of bhakti? The sixth characteristic is that it attracts Krishna himself. And the fifth element is it gives the highest bliss. And how does that result? That comes from prema. The devotee is not so much interested just in purification. Though the Lord does this automatically for the devotee, more than just purification from material contamination and ignorance is the bestowal of prema, pure bhakti, which consists of Ladini and some of the Shaktis. So this is a much more significant goal for the jiva than simply getting purified of his sins and karma. So simply by purification of sins, karma, ignorance, etc., what do we get? Moksha, liberation. We enter into Brahman. If we do bhakti, that is attained. We get free from karmas, ignorance, etc. But through bhakti, we get prema. So we get something more than liberation. And what does that do when we get that prema? Then we experience bliss in relation to the Supreme Lord. Whereas when we get Brahman realization, we get peace only, absence of our material suffering. So therefore, the purification is there as insignificant byproduct of the process of bhakti. So one of the qualities of bhakti is moksha lagudakrit. Bhakti derides liberation. Now, of course, that manifests on bhava stage. where one experiences the Lord directly, and therefore one experiences bliss, and consequently liberation is understood to have minimal bliss. So therefore, bhakti is considered much better. Akura, of course, glorifies the Lord for his purifying aspect here, rather than the prema aspect. And we'll find often in the Bhagavatam that this is quite commonly. The Lord is glorified for destroying sins, karmas, etc., miseries, all that, which is not untrue, but the Lord gives much more than that as well. But to encourage people in the material world, often there's stress given to the purifying aspect and the aspect of getting rid of suffering, etc. But as devotees, we understand that there is a much more important, higher goal that the Supreme Lord gives. But it is also natural, we can say, for Akura to express himself in this way, the purifying aspect, because this shows the power of the Supreme Lord. The ignorance of the material world and the problems of the material world are normally inescapable. We cannot overcome them. And therefore, Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita says, Mama Maya Duratyaya. It is impossible to overcome this Maya. So by our individual struggle, we can never erase all the karmas and the ignorance and the suffering, etc. It's impossible to do. The Lord is capable of doing that because he's the one that controls karma, everything. He's beyond ignorance, etc. So very easily he can do that. When we talk about the Lord destroying all ignorance and purifying one, etc., then this is an indication of the great power and position of the Supreme Lord. He can do what jivas cannot do on their own. We may object, of course, and say, well, look, jnanis and yogis, they don't worship the Supreme Lord and they can get liberation. But if we look closely, and we see the Bhagavatam, Bhagavatam also denies that. They can also not get liberation, actually. So it is said, Padantino Nadarta Yushmad Agraha. If the person does not worship your lotus feet, then he falls. After struggling for liberation, he falls from his position. He does not get real liberation. So the jnani and the yogi that offend the Lord, they don't worship him, they refuse the worship of the Lord, cannot get liberation. So the processes of jnana yoga by themselves don't give liberation. So how do they get liberation? So the answer is, they must not offend the Lord, and they worship him to some degree. So they worship the Lord for liberation. So they accept the Lord, they worship him, and then the Lord gives them liberation. So the liberation aspect of their sadhana depends on bhakti, depends on mercy of the Supreme Lord. On their own, without that mercy of Supreme Lord, they cannot get liberation. They only think they are liberated. Vimukta manina. But actually not. Even liberation, the absolute purification of the jiva depends on the Supreme Lord. So that is the one aspect of the greatness of the Lord. And he can do that easily. So the jnanis and yogis worship the Lord a little, but mainly they're concerned with their yoga or jnana sadhana. And thus, the process takes a long time. Because they get little mercy from the Lord. The devotees neglect jnana and yoga and karma, and they do bhakti. So therefore, very quickly, they get liberated from the material world and attain the Lord. So liberation is not the goal of the devotee, and it is attained very, very easily. He is more interested in attaining prema. So here, Akura is emphasizing the purification aspect of the Lord and how he destroys ignorance, etc., and sin, all of these different things, to show the power of the Supreme Lord. Devotees of Vrindavan, on the other hand, don't talk about purification when they speak about Krishna at all. They only speak about their wonderful relationship with him and how he is a wonderful person, and they get great happiness by serving him. And he is their life and soul, etc. And without him they cannot exist. That's how they praise Krishna. They praise his beauty. They praise his sweet pastimes. They praise his how he protects the people of Vrindavan, etc. They praise his flute playing. They praise his beautiful eyes and his color, etc. But they don't involve themselves in how great is the Lord and how he purifies you from material existence, etc. That they don't think of anything like that at all. But for persons like Akura and the Yadus, yes, they understand Krishna's Supreme Lord, so therefore it's natural that they will emphasize the aspect of power in Krishna. So here, the fortunate feature of for Uddhava, why he's so fortunate, is that the Lord has come to his house personally. Krishna has entered into his house. So this is a, even if they do, Akura and others see the Lord, Krishna as Supreme Lord, even this is a rare thing, to have the Lord enter into one's house personally. And that is expressed about the Pandavas also. How rare it is that the Supreme Lord went to the Pandavas' house and he stayed in their house personally. Of course, they also recognize him as Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord belongs to a spiritual world and Vaikuntha, etc. But he is very merciful and he comes into the houses of his devotees. And this is particularly true of Krishna, more than the other forms of the Lord. Even when they see him as Supreme Lord, he still interacts with them in Mathura and Dwarka more like a human being than the other forms of the Lord. So he stays in the house of the Pandavas and they treat him as their relative, etc. When he's with the Yadus, they also treat him as their relative. Even there is some sweetness in their relationship because of the very nature of Krishna. So though they recognize him as Supreme Lord, the relationship with him is somewhat sweeter than the relationship that others have with the other forms of the Lord. In any case, whether Krishna is in Mathura, Dwarka, or Vrindavan, there is more sweetness there than there is in relationships with the other forms of the Lord.
Yeah. You mentioned that householders perform the backbone for the other ashrams and they'll be helping. But we also hear that householders are fallen. So it looks contrary.
The householder who has fallen is the one who is actually not following the duties of household life properly, the Grihamedi, and who gets in illusion and merely wants to support his family, and consequently he'll neglect all the other duties that he should do in relation, like the Pancha Mahayagyas and welcoming the guests, etc. And he doesn't want to spend his money on those things. Rather, he'll hoard his money and support himself and his family. So then that type of householder is condemned. But as Krishna also praises the householder, And Krishna himself was a householder in Dwarka and set a good example for others. So if it's executed properly, then there's no real criticism. We see in Lord Chaitanya's pastime, most of his devotees were householders. Very few were brahmacharis or sannyasis. Only a handful. Most were grihasthas. So no criticism of them. So, of course, in the varnashram system itself, the grihastha ashram is often glorified. It's the biggest ashram. There's much fewer brahmachari, sannyasis, and vanaprasthas. And there's mainly households because all of the varnas can become grihasthas. But not all of them can become sannyasis or vanaprasthas or brahmacharis. Sudras, which make up the majority of the population, can't become any of those. They can only become grihasthas. They can't become brahmacharis, vanaprasthas, or sannyasis. And they're the majority of the population. And then Vaishyas and Kshatriyas, usually brahmachari life is very short, a few days. And then vanaprastha maybe, but usually not. And only a few sannyasis from the brahmanas. So these ashram is very small. And grihastha ashram is everywhere. So that is why all the rules in the varnashram system usually apply to the householder. We have whole, you know, manusmriti and all the rules and regulations. And it's all for householders. And if they follow properly, then they have sense control. So there's no criticism of that.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Will be incurred sin or karma if we kill insects like cockroach, mosquitoes, ants? Will you get sin? By
if you kill cockroaches and mosquitoes?
If you kill them.
Uh-huh. Where do they get sin for that? Well, if we do it who was the... Janamajaya was killing snakes, and now, of course, if you kill a snake, it's a poisonous. We don't get any sin for that. But then he had a whole snake yoga, and he's trying to kill all the snakes in the world, so that wasn't considered very proper. So we don't unnecessarily kill other creatures, but if they're interfering for some reason in our devotional activities, then we may have to take some action.
If you see this Janamajaya, no, his case was he wants to take the revenge actually. Revenge, but the revenge is considered like a sin, correct? Revenge is considered as a sin, but he is not doing out of, you know, duty.
It
is sin, we can consider.
Well, it's out of passion, we're doing out of passion, so we're not actually following proper rules, you know, and doing so.
Mother, sometimes we see, you know, this devotees, although he accepts Supreme Lord as a goal, sometimes out of or you know to show the world he does some other karmas also, like you know this deva pitri bhuta sometimes he does so, but there is a fault, you know, in the system, because we cannot do actually properly, especially in the Kali Yuga, because there will be always someone will remain unsatisfied, you know. So sometimes do the devotees get a reaction of that fault
for what?
While performing these duties, you know.
For doing them or not doing them?
For doing. When they do this, because there is always fault, they cannot satisfy fully. But although they accept the Supreme Lord as a goal, only to show the people in the world they perform this kind of duties.
Yeah.
So, as there is a fault and there is a, and they cannot do it properly also, is there any fault? They do they get any reaction for this or not?
Well, if they worship the Supreme Lord, then the fault is covered. And of course we also say that Nam Sankirtan, it covers up all faults. So therefore, along with any activity, we have to do Nam Sankirtan, and this will absolve us of the faults in that particular activity.
Sometimes we see that when the devotees in the beginning stage, they neglect the worship of the demigods also, in the beginning stage also. Mm-hmm. Although they are not that much matured, but faith also not strong, only that, you know, someone told not to worship, that's why I'm not worshipping. And sometimes devotees neglect even the demigods also. Mm-hmm. Neglect the demigods also. So for that also, do they get some reaction? I think they get some reaction.
Well, we don't have to worship the demigods if we worship the Supreme Lord, because it's said here he is all deva, sarva deva. So if we worship the Lord, all the devatas are satisfied. Now, as out of duty or whatever, we can do that, not because we're attached to it, but just for set an example for people who are criticized or whatever. But we should never be too attached to that also. And we should never think that if we don't do that, we commit sin. Then it becomes anartha. So, and it covers up the bhakti. So, we could do those things, but without attachment.